I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. A good-hearted but down-on-his-luck dreamer is on the brink of disaster. His only hope seems to be in one big night, one big payday, and he just cannot figure out how to make it work. Just when all seems lost, a surprising turn just might allow his dream to come true. That's been a standard Hollywood storyline since the early days of film. But Honey Dripper is anything but your standard Hollywood movie. Set in the cotton fields of Jim Crow Alabama, Honey Dripper mixes music with an honest look at the daily humiliations of life endured by African Americans in the segregated South. Honey Dripper is up for two prizes tonight at the NAACP Image Awards. The film is the latest project of independent filmmaker John Sayles and his producer and life partner Maggie Renzi. They join me in our studio to talk about Honey Dripper and hopefully a bit about themselves. Welcome. Thanks for coming.
Hello.
Nice to be here.
John Sayles, you wrote this film. How did the story come to you?
You know, it was rattling around in my head for quite a long time. It's inspired, not based, on a short story that I wrote that's in my last story collection, Dillinger in Hollywood. And I think it came out of just a long experience with American music, which comes up from the South, and thinking about that sea change that happened when that solid body electric guitar showed up, and an awful lot of people who played music had to either get on board or get left behind.
Honey Dripper is about a lot of things. It's about race. It's about change. It's very much about music. And I want to tell a little bit about the story. Danny Glover plays a piano player and club owner, Tyrone Pinetop Purvis. And here's a scene where I think he talks about what music can mean. Let's play it.
See, this old boy, first one, he know how to play all of them kinds of African instruments. I mean, he can play mud if you give him a key and a tempo. Yeah, got music in his head and his heart, and every damn piece of him, there's music. And one day, the master's away. And he alone in that room with that piano.
Yeah, watch out now.
And he goes over, and he sits down on the bench. And he spreads his fingers over it, the way he's seen that minuet player do. And he thinks. And he thinks. Lord help me. I could do some damage with this thing.
That was Danny Glover, and the other voice you heard was that of Charles Dutton. How did that scene come to you? It's a remarkable image.
I started thinking about that various thing. And when I was thinking about that scene, is well, who was the first guy? You know, there was, in Civil War days, there was a guy named Blind Tom who was a slave, and he played classical music. And it was like he was from outer space or something for people then, but he was just a musician, you know, and he had a great ear, and he could play. American music, I think, is the place where Americans meet first, where ethnic groups meet first, where racial groups meet first. Before they can even look each other in the eye, they're listening to each other's music.
Do you play?
No, I don't. I listen real hard. But music talks to me, all kinds of music.
Maggie, talk to me about the plot. Tell me a little bit more about the plot for those who haven't seen it. Don't give all the good stuff away.
I won't give the good stuff away, but in a way, what you said before, it really describes it. It's a guy who has got to move forward. He's got to change. He has to deal with some demons that have been dogging him, which actually, as it happens, has to do with a guitar player he killed as a young man. We don't know that for a while. And there's a spirit, the spirit of the blues, who's played by Keb Moe, a character John calls Possum, who's a blind guitar player, who's turns up to taunt him and to provoke him into making this change. He has what's one of my favorite lines in the movie, where Tyrone is waiting for this guitar player to come and change his life.
You waiting on somebody?
And Keb Moe's character says, nothing on that chain.
Don't change your luck, Tyrone. You're going to have to save your own self.
What do you know about anything?
Oh, nothing much. But I know you. Way back.
And There's a lot of times where we've been making this movie and going around and promoting it because we're releasing it ourselves that I keep thinking, Maggie, nothing in this, you know, on that train is going to change your life. You've got to change it by yourself.
I want to talk more about that, like how you all keep doing what it is that you're doing. Mm-hmm. But before we talk about the business, I want to talk about the movie itself. A lot of the typical Hollywood movie has like the hero and the other characters kind of revolve around that mm-hmm. hero. And in Honey Dripper and many of your movies, it's really more about the community.
Mm-hmm.
This is what your like 16th film, and many of them have that sort of quality of if it's there, everybody's important. And why mm-hmm. do you do it that way?
Well, I think it's how I see the world. You know, I don't see it in heroic terms. Also, I was an actor before I was a writer or a director. And one of the first things an actor does is you say, how does my character see the world? When I write a screenplay, I read it over the first draft and I read every part as if I had to play it. And then you say, well, where's the rest of me? You know, what would make me a more three-dimensional person? What I always tell my actors is, I don't care if you've only got two pages. We should feel like the camera could follow you off screen and have a total movie that could happen there that would be interesting. I think who we are is partly, you know, when we grew up, where we grew up, who we grew up with, our place in the community. And we don't have a personality other than that. You know, we're not little islands.
You've got some amazing people in this film. You've got, you know, Danny Glover, Charles Dutton, Lisa Gay Hamilton, Keb Mo, and I'm not trying to get into your business, but I'm assuming, I don't know, but I'm assuming you can't pay them what they could get for like a Lethal Weapon.
You bet.
And I'm just wondering how you managed to do that.
We do two things. One is that they don't have to work for us for very long. That anybody who worked for the full shoot only worked for 5 weeks. We pay everybody the Screen Actors Guild minimum, which is not chump change, but it certainly is far less than Danny could get paid in any good payday. The same thing with several of the other people who are in the movie. Part of it is that the quality of the material is very high, and word's out that John Sayles writes really good roles. And, you know, we heard it, you know, over and over again. Usually, not only are most movies not ensemble, but if there's any black people in it, there's two. Well, this was an almost entirely black cast.
And they're the best friend.
Yeah, exactly.
They're the best friend.
They're the best friend. The one who's easily, you know, either killed or left behind.
Oh, the truth-telling sidekick.
And you got it. And in this case, no matter where they turned, there was somebody else whose work that they had admired. And it was like an August Wilson play some mm-hmm. days, you know, especially because we were there in the Honey Dripper bar a lot of the time.
Not to give it all away, but as we've said, that the whole issue here is that Danny Glover's character has to save his club, and he's looking for that big payday, and he's got to figure out what to do. And then this young fellow comes along, and he's thinking, well, gee, maybe I can get this young guy to, you know. Yeah. So how did you find him? He's actually got a great performance.
Gary Clark Jr.
Yeah, how'd you find him?
Our friend Lewis Black, not the comedian, but the editor of the Austin Chronicle, and he started South by Southwest. When we told Lewis the story, he said, oh, then you got to come see Gary Clark, who was rocked in the cradle of Austin music since he was 12 years old when he started playing the guitar. So when we went to see Gary at the Continental Club there, he had just turned 21, and he was great. And they're just
so he's not really an actor. He doesn't see himself as an actor. He sees himself primarily as a musician.
Yeah, he's a musician. He's a guitar player, and he plays this kind of music, which is not common for a young African-American man.
The film doesn't shy away from the real abuse that mm-hmm. African-American people suffer daily in the South, and just like conditions that even though this was set in 1950,
mm-hmm.
we're not that far away from Reconstruction, from slavery. And I just want to play a short clip about that.
And you're the piano man.
Piano man, arranger, you name it.
I must have been something to travel the country first class.
I don't know about first class, but they've seen the country.
How come he stopped?
I got tired of carrying another man's water. Didn't want to die in no colored hotel some night in who knows where, Arkansas. Met Delilah. Wanted something of my own.
Of course, that was Danny Glover and Gary Clark Jr. How do you integrate that kind of realism into a film without making the story so depressing that nobody's going to want to see it?
Well, some of it is that dark undertone, and that's in the movie. But there's also this thing that people not only survived, they thrived. They had fun. They created culture. They had music. They supported each other. They had families. You know, all the things that human beings do despite all the odds, they had a gallows humor about the whole thing. And that's an important part of the story, too. You know, I always say that the first 50, 55 years of motion picture history were part of the problem in terms of race relationships. And when they started to turn, the first couple movies, it was, you know, Nobody Knows the Trouble I Seen would play on the soundtrack every time you saw, you know, a black character. Well, there's another side of that, which was the joyous side. You know, and often it was when there were no white people around. Well, guess what? Life exists when there are no white people around. And that's a lot of what's in the movie, is that human ability to live and enjoy life and enjoy each other, and despite this ceiling that's very low over your head.
Yeah, which is the power of Saturday night at the juke joint or Sunday morning in church. And of course, there are plenty of people who partook of both.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More. We're speaking with filmmaker John Sayles and his producer and partner Maggie Renzi about their latest project, Honey Dripper. Speaking of race, it's been a discussion point in at least the last couple of years that I've noticed, the whole question of who gets to tell whose stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, whether as white filmmakers telling a story that centers on the African-American experience, mm-hmm. across racial experience, but African-Americans mm-hmm. at the center of the mm-hmm. story. I wonder how you thought about your role in the storytelling as the filter, as the lens
by which
the story was told.
Yeah, I've been doing this since my first novel, you know, which was 1975, so it's not anything new to me. I feel it's like the music, which is the music belongs to everybody, and this is America's story. You know, it's like, you know, when they first started being, you know, African-American history departments, well, they only had to have those because that history was not being taught in American history, and it's absolutely our history.
Maggie, any thoughts?
Well, you know, I think this is a question that's being asked a lot lately. You know, I mean, we made The Brother from Another Planet, which is about a black extraterrestrial in Harlem. I mean, specifically, the African-American experience. Alfre Woodard plays a character in Passion Fish. We've made movies in Ireland. I mean, we made one of the first really significant movies about lesbians called Leanna. And nobody ever said that we couldn't.
But I do want to ask, because it is still a question of some folks feeling that they don't get a chance to have their say. And
mm-hmm. Listen, anybody, I mean, our chance is a chance that we made. Nobody handed us this chance to say what we say, you know. I think we go to interesting places to try to explore a whole lot of different experiences. And I think behind all of this is a lack of compassion and an assumption that we can't understand each other. And across history, literature has been written out by people outside their characters. I find it a really it's a conversation that makes me sad, because it's so polarizing. We try hard to make the movies be authentic, be respectful of the communities where we make them, and the response that we get pretty much everywhere we've been is thank you for helping to tell our story.
Maggie, you said something earlier that nobody kind of gave you permission to make these films. That's mm-hmm. true. I mean, and the name John Sayles is pretty much synonymous with independent filmmaking. So much has changed since you started. I mean, this used to be something kind of radical and outside mm-hmm. the box. Now it's very well respected. But is it any easier?
You know, it's easier to make a movie. Where the bottleneck is an exhibition and distribution. There's only 52 weeks in the year. There's only so many screens that show non-Hollywood things. So there's a lot of competition, a lot more than when we started 30 years ago. You know, a good thing that's changed is now it's not just possible, but it's actually kind of a cool thing for well-known actors to be in those movies. When we first started, the idea of alternative cinema or independent movies, there was something political about it of we're going to tell stories that Hollywood's not going to tell. I'd say that 85 to 90% of the movies that are made outside of Hollywood now are just, look at me, don't you want to hire me? Which is fine. You know, it's like the minor leagues. They're making very low budget versions of what will eventually be Hollywood movies if they're successful.
You two have been together for quite a long time. I think you've collaborated on what, like 13?
13 of the 16.
Of the 16.
And we've lived together since 1973.
Yeah. Before many people were born.
Yeah, when dinosaurs walked the earth.
But, yeah. Right.
What's that like? living together, working together?
Oh, it's good. You know, I think we just keep talking about all those divorces that you see on the cover of People magazine. Those are people who met on a film set and then never got to work together again. And, you know, they're often...
Because they were actors.
Yeah, exotic locales. And we get to go to whatever exotic locale, like Alabama, together and have our adventures together and make new friends together. And it helps, I think. We successfully make these movies together and we're proud of them.
I hope you don't mind my asking, but to be so involved in the films, it's the first time I've met you. Does that bother you that you're less well-known?
Thank you for asking, Carl. You know, it used to bother me, and then I suppose right around the time when I didn't care anymore, the story started to be about the John and Maggie show. And I really like it now that it is. People know who work with us that I'm a very big part of why it happens the way it happens, which is basically a really egalitarian and, I hope, joyful workplace is what I aim for. And so that's my distinctive mark on it. And I know that, John, you appreciate that as much as I appreciate you as a director.
Hey, don't talk for him. Come on. He can speak for himself.
Say something nice about her, for God's sake.
Yeah. I think one of the, you know, one of the advantages that I have is that I have a producer who is on my side. And when I'm directing, I really have to kind of be caring mostly about what's in front of the lens. And a lot of what Maggie does is make sure that everything behind it is working. Maggie does it really well, and she also does it making the same movie that I'm doing. And because, you know, so many Hollywood stories are about somebody undermining somebody else and the so-called creative differences and all those power struggles. You know, quite honestly, we just don't have to deal with that.
So what's next for you?
We finance this movie ourselves and we're distributing ourselves. So we have to wait to see how if any money comes in to see if we're going to make any more movies, which is that's the life of an independent, you know, filmmaker. I'm back to fiction writing and I'm writing a novel set during the Philippine-American War. From about 1898 to 1903.
John Sayles and Maggie Renzi are independent filmmakers. Their latest movie, Honey Dripper, stars Danny Glover, Charles Dutton, Keb Moe, and many others. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
Pleasure. For having us.
To take a look at some scenes from Honey Dripper and find out how you can see it, please go to our website at npr.org/tellmemore.